Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We start the show off this week with the second part of my chat with relationship coach Frank B. Kermit about how to handle a breakup. I then chat with our smart shopping expert Solmaz McDaddy on the keys to success when it comes to holiday shopping so that you don't blow your budget apart. I also discuss the sex abuse scandal that's come to light at Penn State University and if the accused, Jerry Sandusky, should have granted a television interview to talk about the charges or should he have just kept his mouth shut. We round things out with an excellent remix from Katy Perry, The One That Got Away.
Capture your need for sound.
Recently, we spoke with our relationship coach, Frank B. Kermit, on how to handle a breakup, especially if there are children involved. We're now going to discuss how to handle a breakup if there are no connection pieces involved and what steps you should take to work through your emotions and behaviors. Frank, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, great to be here once again.
Frank, what is the first thing that you should do with yourself, you know, after you break up with someone or if you get broken up with and there is no one else involved but the two of you?
Well, the first thing is to manage your emotions. Make sure that you don't get caught up in the moment. The pain that you're feeling right now is very temporary. As bad as it was, and we're assuming it's nothing like, we're assuming that it doesn't involve any sort of domestic abuse. It's relationships start, relationship ends, they tend to go south, it happens. What you don't do is you don't go around bad-mouthing your ex. That's the biggest no-no anybody could ever do. Because that's not a reflection on your ex, it's a reflection on you. You chose to date the person that you went out with. You don't choose who you feel things for, but you do choose who you go out with. And you constantly bad-mouthing your ex, big no-no. What you need to be focusing on is, what did you learn from that relationship? And that's the story you tell.
And how do you handle things if you work in the same environment or company and, above and beyond that, if you end up having the same sort of social network?
It's important to remember that when you're dealing with a social network, you do not ask people to take sides and you don't share the personal stories that broke you up. If people ask you, hey, how come the two of you aren't together anymore? The most you should say is something along the lines of, I am disappointed we're not together, but it wasn't working out, and we're just better off not being in a relationship. Now, if you can, try to salvage your friendship. But being friends doesn't mean that you're best buddies and that you share secrets and that you tell each other about the new people you're dating. It means that you don't be enemies. You don't get in each other's way. You don't try to sabotage each other's attempts to be happy.
And speaking of sort of being, friends, if you want to put it that way, how do you handle, extricating yourself from your ex's life, especially if, they do want to remain friends? Because I think even with the best of intentions, there probably needs to be some sort of cooling off period.
There definitely needs to be a cooling off period. One of the rules to follow is that you don't flirt with an ex. There are some people who are just generally very friendly and very flirty. And they flirt with pretty much everyone. They make those, little jokes what I'm trying to say is you don't get into those type of behavior patterns with an ex because you might be sending the wrong message. If your ex is still in love with you and you were the one to break it off, flirting with your ex or insinuating that there might be something that you're going to get back together or joking around about hooking up again, your ex is not taking these as jokes. Your ex might take these as a sign that you want to rekindle. And if that's not the case, it's unethical to do that.
And how do you handle things, Frank, though, if, you're not trying to send mixed signals, but let's say you are the dumper, for lack of a better word, and you are trying to be as compassionate to your ex as possible, and you try to let them know that you still love them and care about them, but that you know that it's not, sort of meant to be. Because I find it's a fine balance. I feel like there's so many people that when they break up, they don't care about the other person. It's like, screw you, I've moved on, or you make me unhappy, or whatever it is. And so they end it. And then there's contentiousness. But what happens if you just realize as the dumper that it's not working out, you still love the other person, but you just know it's not meant to be? How do you handle that? Because you want to be supportive, I think, if you are a caring human being. But I know that sometimes it can be taken the wrong way.
Well, you're not supposed to be there for your ex when you break up with your ex, even if you still care about that person. The bottom line is you continuing to, quote unquote, be there for your ex once the two of you have split is just leading them on. It's continuing the hurt. You know, in some cases, this is a form of emotional abuse because this is how an emotional manipulator would work. An emotional manipulator would break up with the person and then be there for them so it constantly keeps them hooked. You never do that. They need to find their own friends. They need to find their own sources of support. And you might even, you know, bring them to that. But it's not for you to be that source of support.
I think it's good that you said that, Frank, because I think that there are people out there that break up that, you know, aren't trying to be malicious and do want the best for the other person, and they're kind of stuck in, you know, not knowing what to do. So I think it's important that you pointed out that you can't be that person for your ex in the immediate present moment.
You know, now, again, let's look at a different context here. Let's say in about 7 or 8 years, you meet up with your ex again and you want to start a friendship, and your ex is going through another breakup and you want to be that friend at that point. If the distance was sufficient enough that the person has no delusions of you know, rekindling and getting back together, okay, you might play that role at that time. But when you are the one who just immediately ended the relationship, being there for your ex is not a good idea. And you have to also remember that sometimes the person will call on the ex to be there. When you break up with somebody, you have to mean it. And if you mean it, it means you remove yourself from that person's life. And it's unpleasant, but it's necessary. Because every time you get pulled back in, well, it's my birthday in a couple of weeks, and I thought we could still spend some time together. If you're looking to continue the relationship, then continue the relationship, and when the tough times come up, don't be so quick to break up. But if this is a real legitimate breakup, that's not a time to be going back and saying, yeah, but it's the birthday. Yeah, but it's a holiday. Yeah, but something was really happening and it really wouldn't be a good idea for me to leave right now. No, that's it. If you're going to go as far as to break up and end the relationship, then do just that. And if, yeah, it is harsh, but that's the point. If you're not sure about whether or not you should break up because there's a holiday coming up, maybe you should be thinking, well, if I'm thinking in terms of a holiday, maybe that's just an excuse and I really want to work it out, but I don't know how.
I think that's so important, Frank. I just think that's such an important thing for people to understand, that you have to have that time frame of separation. And then that brings me to the next thing. What's the difference between, I suppose, staying friends versus staying friendly?
Staying friends means that you're probably going to be sharing secrets. You're going to be involving the person in your outings, in your social events. And staying friendly just means you're not enemies. And that's very important. And I think most couples strive to be friends, and all that does is that it confuses the issue. I can tell you that a lot of people who start dating someone and then find out that their ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend is still their best friend, that is a potential threat to any future relationship that either partner wants to set up. Because the new person coming in is going to say, well, wait a minute, if you're still best friends with your ex, why am I here? I'm not going to put myself out there. I'm not going to make myself vulnerable to this situation. That's ridiculous. So it's very important to remember that if you're going to stay friends, chances are that that friendship, especially for the initial while, that friendship could interfere with your ability to meet somebody new. And at the very least, you need to stay friendly. It means that you're not the best buds in the world, but you're not going to, you know, call each other every night or every week just to say, hey, how's it going? It's more along the lines of, I'm not going to be this person's enemy, and this person's not going to be my enemy. We're not going to do anything bad to one another. We're not going to speak badly about one another. We're going to be neutral. And when I say to people, be friendly towards your ex, it means be neutral to them. That doesn't mean that you go out of your way to hurt them. It also means you don't go out of your way to be super friendly to them, because, again, that would just confuse the issue.
Joining us on the show is relationship coach and columnist for the West End Times, Frank B. Kermit. Check him out on his website, www.franktalks.com. If you are the dumper, again, Frank, for lack of a better term, is it important to make yourself available to answer your ex's questions? Because they might be, you know, reeling and looking for answers. And do you sort of owe that to them at least once to have like sort of a big sit-down conversation, I guess, post-mortem, as it, you know, as it were?
Well, okay, in an ideal world, we would all get the answers that we want, and all those answers would be satisfactory. That's an ideal world. In the real world, most of the time, you're not going to get the answers you want, and the answers you do get won't make the situation any easier. If you are the person ending the relationship, be honest about the reasons. And when I say to be honest about the reasons, I mean explain why you don't see a future with this person. So let's use a very specific example. Two people are dating. They really like each other. One of them is allergic to cats. The other person has a love of cats and, in fact, rescues animals regularly and will sometimes house animals in that person's apartment. Now, they may really get along. They may have such a wonderful connection. But the person who's allergic to the animals is probably thinking, look, I don't see a future because at some point, if we're living together, you won't be able to bring animals into the house anymore. And I can't live with somebody long-term who's constantly got animal hair on them because I'm just going to continue to get sick. And it's one thing if I expose myself every couple of weekends. It's another thing if I'm going to expose myself to that every day, and there is no future. Now, when the person who does the dumping in that situation gives that as a legitimate reason and says, we connect really great, but our lifestyles are incompatible, our medical conditions are incompatible, be honest about that. Sometimes hearing that kind of an honest answer might be enough. However, some people are still unreasonable because they're hurting, and it isn't their logical mind that's responding to this. They're speaking from their source of suffering. And they hear this and they say, no, but we can still make it work. I don't understand why you're giving up on us. Look, it could be something as simple as logistics. They simply live too far away from each other, and they spend a couple of hours in commute because neither one has a car. It could be things like that that bring about the end of a relationship that have nothing to do with the really important things like how a person treats you. But when it comes to matching up lifestyles and trying to have a lifestyle with the person that you're in a relationship with, this is important as well. And if somebody doesn't see a future, the ethical thing to do is to end the relationship and say, I'm setting you free so you can meet someone better suited for you, and I can meet someone better suited for me. Staying in a relationship because you don't want to hurt the person, that's unethical, because you're preventing that person from finding someone better suited to them than you are.
And Frank, if you are the person that's being broken up with, how should you manage your emotions? Because I'm assuming that, you know, going postal on your ex is not the best the best tactic.
It's very important to remember, especially now with new technologies and social network websites and that sort of thing, social media networks or whatever the terminology is, it's very important to remember you don't burn your bridges because it's not worth it. It's not worth the long-term consequences. Because let's say even if in that moment you feel so justified, look, even at your best, you're still only 50% of a relationship, and the other 50% is who you choose to date. And if it doesn't work out, you have to take some responsibility in the fact that you chose that other person. And you freaking out on them, even if it might make you feel good in the moment, in the long term, all it does is it hurts your own reputation. In every relationship, especially the fact that most relationships end at some point, whether by death or whether by two people or one person in the couple saying it's over, every relationship has something to teach you. Focus on what you've learned from each relationship so you don't make that same mistake again, whatever it was. And if you can do that, if you can find meaning even in the worst breakups and find meaning in those relationships by looking at what you learned from that relationship so you don't repeat the behavior pattern, that's the power of a relationship, even if it has ended.
And Frank, you mentioned just moments ago, you know, that initial pain, that's so awful, and you think your heart's going to fall and break out, and, you know, it's just bad times. Are there tricks for a person being broken up with to sort of handle those? And I want to say the initial 2 weeks, because if I look back in my relationship history, it feels like it's always the 2 weeks post breakup that just are god awful. And then after that, I feel like you see the light of day. So what do you say to someone, you know, for the immediate days following a breakup, if they're the person that's been broken up with?
Okay, the first few things I would tell them is that it's normal for them to mourn the end of the relationship. There's nothing wrong with that. Trying to hate their ex just to get over the mourning process is not a good idea. look at what you've learned from the relationship. But mostly, and this is something that I used in order to get over some of the worst heartaches I had, it's a two-step process. The first is you have to manage your expectations. You have to realize that part of your pain comes from the fact that you had unreasonable expectations of that relationship. And when those expectations were not met, that's part of the pain. And the second thing to remember is that you have to go through the mourning process of the future you built up in your head with that other person. See, you're not just mourning the loss of the relationship that happened. You also have to mourn all those hopes and dreams you had about building a future with that person. Here's why. There are conscious thoughts and there's the unconscious. And when you have a fantasy, when you say, oh, I could just picture the two of us together in 5 or 10 years from now, even though the conscious mind says, I know the difference between that fantasy of 5 or 10 years from now and today, the unconscious does not know the difference. As far as the unconscious is concerned, that element, those stories that you played out that are supposed to happen 5 or 10 years in the future are just as real as what has actually happened. And that's why you have to mourn it. You have to mourn the future you built up with that person. Go through that mourning process. This is why one of the tenets of mastering relationship management is that you don't build up these futures like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be like when we're together in 5 years. If the person hasn't even earned that level of commitment from you, just playing around with those ideas becomes very, very hurtful in the end, because your subconscious doesn't know the difference between fantasy and reality. So if you are the type of person that you spend hours upon hours just building up these potential scenarios and family-like scenarios and, well, we're going to retire together, those fantasies also need to be mourned, because they die when the relationship dies. They end when the relationship ends. And you have to mourn for them as if they actually had happened.
Frank, if you do end on good terms, you know, for the most part, what does being a, you know, quote-unquote good friend to your ex mean?
Well, I have a very, very strict definition of what a good friend is. And not everybody agrees with me, so you might get a little bit of controversy with this. But I believe that a true friend wants to see you happy. A true friend wants you to find love, even if it's not with them. So if someone tells you that, yeah, I think we should just be friends, great. Which of your friends do you want to set me up on a date with? That's where you find out if the person is serious about being your friend. If they're willing to set you up on a date with someone that they think is going to be more compatible with you than they were, that's a friend. But if the person says, hey, wait a minute, you're my ex, I'm not going to set you up with anybody, I don't want to see you date somebody else, now you're not being a friend. Now you're being a vindictive ex. And that's part of the reason you need to separate yourself.
Should you ever ask your ex favors, Frank?
Well, my general advice is no. Because again, all that's going to do is generate potential negative feelings. Especially if the feelings are very raw. Asking an ex for a favor might make that person feel, oh, so I'm not good enough to date, but I'm good enough to do these favors for you. You use me. You never loved me. You've always just taken advantage of me. You don't want to get into that. Now you have the other flip side here. You ask your ex to do a favor for you, and if your ex still has feelings for you, or if the situation is reversed, doing a favor, asking for a favor, can be misinterpreted as, oh, it's a sign they want to try to work it out again. And misleading somebody is the wrong thing to do. If you're going to break up with somebody, that's it. It's over. It's done. And if you're not ready to be done, don't break up and try again.
Okay, I just think that's excellent advice, Frank. I think a lot of people get stuck in that middle ground, and very important, either you're on or you're off the wagon. And, you know, something that I just have to bring up, because you often hear of these things happening, you know, of exes hopping in the sack at least once. Is this ever a good idea?
Well, in some cases, it might help people find closure. You know, that one last time just to, you know, if they know that it was going to be the last time and they want to collect the memories or get something out of their system, is it a good idea? Well, some people find closure with it, but generally, no, it's not a good idea for a number of reasons. In some cases, you know, all it's going to do is rekindle the feelings that are still very raw. Hopping into the sex will rarely save the relationship. Some people get the thrill of the sex and, oh, I feel so good again. You know what? We're going to try and work this out. But the issues that were there that broke you up the first time are still going to be there after the sex. In absolute worst-case scenarios, especially if you're dealing with, let's say it's not just a breakup, but a divorce and an end of a marriage, two people getting together for sex, one person can accuse the other of a sexual assault of some sort. And you have to be very mindful that not everybody out there is an honest person. So in some programs on brutal divorce tactics, they talk about how sometimes an ex will attempt to seduce you and get you back into bed so that they can accuse you of forcing themselves on you in order to, you know, because there's a court case going on, there's a settlement that has to be reached. And this is getting very, very nasty when you start involving the law, especially when you're dealing with an accusation that the accusation doesn't have to be true. The accusation alone is incredibly damaging. So the answer is no. When you break up with somebody, getting together for sex, even if you're just doing it as friends, it's just opening up Pandora's box. It's just leading back to a place where you didn't want to be in the first place. Otherwise, you wouldn't have broken up.
Frank, final words for, you know, individuals that have just been, you know, broken up, whether they've done it or they've been broken up with, again, just to sort of have a clear line in their heads of how they should be doing things.
The first thing you need to be doing is figuring out if, A, you need to just spend some time by yourself, figure out what it is you did right, what it is you did wrong, and what to do next. And for other people, it could also just be going out there and meeting new people, not sitting home alone. Some people do very, very well with the concept of, I'm going to be alone for a little while because I just want to do a lot of self-actualization. Other people need to go out and meet new people and start figuring out, oh, I got to try this new interaction. I'm going to try this new behavior with people and see where it gets me. You got to know yourself. But mostly you have to know that the end of a relationship doesn't mean the end of your life. As long as you have learned something from the past relationship, it's now part of your collective experience, and it means that you're going to be in a better position to choose a better future partner to get an even better relationship down the road.
Frank, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I think it's just been an important topic for people to understand, especially when they're in those deep emotional moments, especially after a breakup. So thank you so much.
Kelly, it's been absolutely great, and I know there's a lot of heartbreak out there, but the great thing about heartbreak is that it can teach you so much about yourself so that you never end up in that situation again.
That's Frank B. Kermit, a relationship coach and columnist for the West End Times newspaper. For more information, again, check his website, www.franktalks.com. Something that has been all over the news in the last couple of weeks is the Penn State sex abuse scandal, where former assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky has been charged with 40 counts of sex crimes involving 8 boys, and apparently over a time frame of at least a decade, if not more. Now, he's denied all of the charges. He actually went on television, which a lot of people think was a very stupid mistake on his part, as well as on his lawyer's part, talking about the situation, the scandal. He was on Rock Center speaking with Bob Costas, and I want you to hear some of what he said. The first part you hear is Jerry Sandusky answering to the question, you know, is he guilty of these sex abuse charges?
I say that I'm innocent of those charges.
Innocent, completely innocent, and falsely accused in every aspect?
Well, I could say that, you know, I have done some of those things. I have messed around with kids. I have hugged them, and I haven't touched their leg without intent of sexual contact. But so if you look at it that way, there are things that would be accurate.
Are you denying that you had any inappropriate sexual contact with any of these underage boys?
Yes, I am.
Never touched their genitals, never engaged in oral sex?
Right.
What about Mike McQuarrie, the grad assistant who in 2002 walked into the shower where he says in specific detail that you were forcibly raping a boy who appeared to be 10 or 11 years old, that his hands were up against the shower wall and he heard rhythmic slap, slap, slapping sounds, and he described that as a rape?
I would say that that's false.
What would be his motive to lie?
You'd have to ask him that.
What did happen in the shower the night that Mike McQuarrie happened upon you and the young boy?
Okay, we were showering and horsing around, and he actually turned all the showers on and was actually sliding across the floor, and we were, as I recall, possibly like snapping a towel on horseplay.
Are you a pedophile?
No.
Are you sexually attracted to young boys, to underage boys?
Am I sexually attracted? You know, no. I love to be around them. But no, I'm not sexually attracted to young boys.
I don't know about you, but listening to Jerry Sandusky's commentary, it sounds very creepy and very suspect, to say the least. And yes, he is innocent until proven guilty. But as you were listening, I don't know if you felt the same way that I did, but it just sounds not right. His tone, the way he was saying things, it sounds like he's trying to convince us that things were on the up and up, but I'm not convinced. It definitely sounds like he was involved in inappropriate behavior, unacceptable behavior, to say the least. He shouldn't have been doing, you know, whatever he has been doing with those boys. And, you know, it's going to play out in the coming months. The investigation is going to continue. And again, he is innocent until proven guilty, but I don't think he helped himself whatsoever by doing this interview. I think he really put himself out there and not in a good way. And, you know, I want to give some thoughts and support, I guess, to the alleged victims, because, you know, when all of this comes out in the wash, you know, and if their charges are true, their allegations are true, you know, I hope that they get some sort of peace of mind out of all of this, because I'm sure it was a horrible experience to be going through as a young person and trusting someone like a football coach, an assistant football coach. You know, they're supposed to be the guys that care about you and are trying to help you get ahead in life. And so you place your trust in them. And then, you know, if this is indeed the case that he was involved in sexual behavior with them, sexual abuse, that's just horrible. So I wish them the best of luck, their family members as well. And, you know, it's caused quite the mess as well for Penn State University. You know, their football coach, Joe Paterno, who has been a member of that university for years and years and years and is basically more powerful than the president. He was fired, you know, because of basically a moral standing. Yes, apparently he did go and do his legal duty, but the moral duty, a lot of people felt like he didn't really step up to the plate. So he's been let go. The university president has been let go. Other people have been charged with not coming forward with what things that apparently they knew. One of them, I know another football coach, is on suspension right now. So it's a real big mess for Penn State University. And again, a lot of people that would have trust in administration and people above them, you know, that's gone completely out the window. So Penn State has a lot of work to do to restore their reputation after this completely horrible sex abuse scandal that's going on right now at the university.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It's that time of year again. We've wrapped up Halloween and the holiday shopping season is well underway. To help us get organized and know how to best tackle the holiday shopping season is our smart shopper, Solmaz McDaddy of MySweetDeals.ca. Solmaz, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly.
Solmaz, you know, as we know here on the program, you are an expert on finding good deals and being a smart shopper. But I have to ask you, what is your, you know, most important tip as we march into the holiday gift buying season?
You know, the best thing I could tell people out there is to make a list, you know, make a list of who you want to buy gifts for. And as the Christmas season approaches, you might have an idea for them. So mark it down on that list, and that way you're not running around in circles not knowing what to buy for them. That's probably the best tip I could offer.
And that's something that you should be doing all year long. So even if it's like February and you see, you know, XYZ, mark it down for, you know, 10 months later.
Absolutely. That's something that I've often done. I carry my agenda with me. You can, you know, if you've got an iPhone or whatever, put it in as a note. So I put it in December. So for example, last summer, my boyfriend, he needed tennis equipment. I wouldn't remember come around November, December that he needs tennis equipment because you play tennis in the summer. But if I keep an eye out for those deals, maybe end of season deals that happen in September, October, and I do watch out for things that I've written down back in June or July, then I'm for sure going to make that person really happy because I'm going to surprise them with something that they needed at a low cost, and I won't be running around 2 days before Christmas trying to buy it.
So then to clarify, Solmaz, you make the note when you see it, for example, i.e. the tennis gear, and then, you know, let's say you had to figure that out in April or May or something, but then, like you said, end of season for that would have been September, so that's when you make the purchase for Christmas, correct?
Exactly. So it's a constant looking out, seeing it. Could that be a good gift? You know, and that goes for as much for Christmas as it goes for birthdays. So it's just a good tip to have all year round without being stressed. Because how often do we see people saying, oh my God, it's Christmas in a week and I haven't started shopping. And then you end up doing these impulse buys. And who knows if that's really what the person wanted, but you feel obliged to buy something, obviously, because it's Christmas. You know, you'll be receiving gifts. So you go out, you make impulsive purchases that might not be on sale, that might not even be what they're looking for, and that's really not the spirit of Christmas. You want to get them, the thought has to count, but hopefully you're giving them something that you'll use.
Now, Solmaz, I think a lot of us, you know, are behind schedule with the gift buying, and then I think what, you know, a lot of us do is we start snapping things up left, right, and center, like very impulsively. This obviously has to be a big no-no for the wallet.
Oh, it definitely is. Kelly, how often do we see people come January, they've got these crazy credit card bills. So much stress comes with that. You know, I always say life is short, you want to enjoy it, and Christmas is a nice time of year. So it's really important to set a budget for the loved ones you're going out to buy gifts for. Make sure you have that list with you at all times. You've got some ideas, and you go out and you've got a set budget. And you don't have to buy all at once. Just make sure you go and you shop and you get some ideas. Not all of us have the luxury of the time to go out and multiple times, but try and, you know, start in advance, and that'll give you that, that'll buy you that extra time to not do impulse buying, and you'll be able to make sure that you fit into your budget that you had set aside for yourself and not get that crazy bill come that crazy credit card statement come January.
Now, Solmaz, what is your opinion on this? Because, okay, let's say, you know, you've been writing down the things all year, you have the budget, for example, saying, you know, I'm spending $50 on this person, whatever, and you're kind of like organized. But I know this happens to me, and I want to know what your take on it is, okay? So, you know, we've got the budget, we've got the gift idea, but then, you know, we're all in the store and we're caught up in the mall holiday, you know, feeling of joy and love, and then you see whatever, you know, let's say you were going to buy, like, for example, let's say you'd already bought your boyfriend the tennis stuff. But then you see, oh my Lord, like, look at this, you know, accessory for his iPad. And you're feeling all lovey-dovey and it's Christmas and the Christmas carols are playing in the store. Like, and then you buy it. Like, how do you, not do that, because I feel like it's bad, and I feel like you've gotten caught up. And then again, your January credit card bills are going to be ridiculous.
Right. That's a great point, and I think we can all agree that we've been caught by those kind of impulse purchases, and myself included. And they're not all bad. I guess you just have to ask yourself, based on that budget, if you can allow yourself to do the extra spending. And if you can't, well, you have to be disciplined. And maybe you might want to add that purchase to your list for a birthday or for a Valentine's Day gift, or for just sometimes it's nice to give each other just an I love you gift or I care for you gift in January when it's on sale, perhaps, when you've got the Boxing Day sales. And just kind of stick to the Christmas budget list and then say, you know what, that's a great gift idea, but I'm going to hold off because it's over my budget, and just be disciplined. But do note it and make sure you add it to your list for the next purchase, because if you think he or she would use it and it's a good gift for that person, might be over your budget this time around because you don't want the big credit card statement in January, but it might not be too late to purchase it in January, February, or March when there's another event to celebrate.
Okay, and I think a good word that you used was the word discipline, because I think, like you said, because I just know I've been there. Like it's Christmas, it's happy times, there's, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you're like, ooh, I want to get that. So I think you really have to stop being emotional, if I can use that word, and sort of bring back to your logical self and say, you know what, I'm going to come back and get this for Valentine's Day, like you said. So I think that's a great word, discipline. Now, Solmaz, what is, or what are, I guess, group buying sites, and how can they help with holiday gift buying?
I actually love group buying sites. I find them to be great for consumers, because they do allow you to try out new restaurants or products that you might not otherwise have tried. And so this is a great option for Christmas. You have to check out the deal of the day, and there are different sites out there. It's a huge trend right now, so each is local. When I think of Montreal, I think of Groupon.com, I think of TeamBuy.ca, LivingSocial.com, and these are pretty well established in Canada and even maybe North America. At least Groupon is. It's growing very quickly. So what you do is you subscribe to the deal of the day. You get an email every day, and there might be something out there for your loved ones. And I think this morning was a great deal for a weekend getaway. It was half the price of what it would have cost. I think it was $199 for a weekend getaway, and you get dinner included. So it's really inexpensive. It allows you to go up to the country place, and that would have been maybe $400, $500. So that's a great idea. So you want to make sure, again, you have your ideas in mind, and you might see a great deal. I know I saw a pair of gloves that are made for the iPhone. My dad recently purchased an iPhone, and so these gloves allow you to scroll your iPhone. So they were $14, you know, regular priced $40. Would I have paid $40? No. Am I going to buy that for Christmas for a stocking stuffer for $14? Absolutely. So these are all great Christmas ideas.
That is fantastic. And I think that's just, again, for people to keep in their head, the group buying sites. Joining us on the show right now is smart shopper Solmaz McDaddy of MySweetDeals.ca. Solmaz, what is your take on online shopping? Is it still an important way to go with regards to holiday shopping?
It really is, because I was mentioning before that we all have we don't have the time that we would like to allocate to shopping for a loved one. So shopping online allows you to do it nights, weekends, perhaps during a break during the day. You really, based on your schedule, you're able to browse and find the best deals for you. Because the trick to saving money here is really to knowing what you're buying and what is the lowest price. So if I'm shopping for a TV, for example, well, there are many different TVs out there. Some are more expensive than others. What differentiates them? So I might be able to see, I'll be able to see for sure which TV has the best bang for my buck. And most companies offer free shipping. So now I've just, you know, saved so much time going out there, standing in line, talking to someone. That's not a bad option either. But shopping online is something that I love to do. It saves me a lot of time and a lot of money.
And do you buy clothing online shopping? Because what happens if, you know, you're buying your dad a sweater and it's the wrong size? Like, does that worry you, or do you just, like, you buy it anyway and then deal with it later?
I make sure that there's free return policies. So usually I'll buy from companies that I've bought from before, just that way you kind of know the sizes. And then if I know that I can return it at a store here, for example, I'm buying something off of Gap.com, well, I know that I'll be able to return it at the store over here. So not only am I getting the great deal, perhaps free shipping if they offer it, but I'm able to return it hassle-free so I can give it to him as a gift and then know that if there's a problem, I haven't lost my money and we have to give the sweater to someone else. So that's something I always make sure that I can return it and free of charge. Because if I have to pay to ship it back, well, then you're looking at more of a hassle in that case.
So people really need to be cognizant if they are doing online shopping, what the external things are. Like, it's not just, oh, I'm buying this bike or whatever. It's like, oh, you're going to have to pay $300 to get it shipped. So you really need to be aware of what's happening around the purchase.
Absolutely. That's something I always read the fine print because you never know, especially when you're ordering something from abroad, there might be duties that you end up paying more than had you bought it in your city. So although you think you're scoring a deal, you might not be.
Okay, so people need to be very aware of, again, those two keywords, fine print. Okay, now a lot of us have heard of Black Friday, but I have to ask you, Solmaz, what does it really mean? Because just how great are these sales?
Well, in some instances, they're really, really great deals, but not in all cases. And what you want to make sure is that when you go out shopping for Black Friday is you want to have that list in hand, that famous list, because you might end up there and you see all this marketing, the big red sale tags everywhere, and then you just end up buying stuff that you otherwise might not have bought. And you get home, you realize, you know what? It wasn't as good of a deal as I thought. So that's really, really important because obviously companies will want to market as much of their inventory on that weekend, whether it's Black Friday or Cyber Monday. But you want to make sure that you research. If I'm going out to buy a TV, for example, I'll want to go online and compare prices to make sure that the Black Friday deal is really the best deal possible.
And what is this Cyber Monday? Because I've never heard of it.
Cyber Monday is, the Black Friday is essentially in stores. Also, you'll have some stores that do Black Friday online deals, but the Cyber Monday is online exclusively. So that's that gives you another chance to shop if you haven't gotten all the shopping you wanted on the Friday.
And when you are dealing with Black Friday, you know, sales, is it all about getting there early or knowing exactly what you need or a combination of both? Because it feels like it's almost like a military operation.
It does, you know. And I think to each their own. Some people, it's really important for them to wake up. I think stores open at 5 or 6 a.m. And people stand in lines. As much as I love a deal, that's not something that I would do. A lot of people are willing to do it, and that's great. But I would opt for the, you know what you want, know what you need, go there whenever you can get there. And if it's still available, great. It really depends on the person. I would not go through the trouble for the deal that they're offering. A lot of people would. So I guess you know yourself, you know what you need, up to you to make the decision if you want to wake up around 5 a.m.
Now, something I wanted to point out, because you and I both work in the media, and we both know that sometimes, I guess, depending on how something is being reported, it can obviously influence, you know, shoppers or people, you know, one way or the other. And as you mentioned, you know, you see these people, you know, standing in line at 5 a.m., like ready to go. I think it's important, I guess, that people realize that, you know, when you see these reports on television, you don't really need to be that person. Like, it's not do or die. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, we see it often also with when the new Apple products come out, some people will camp outside, and I am a huge Apple fan, but, you know, I'll be willing to wait. And trust me, deals come around more than once a year. It's not because it's Black Friday that's the be-all and end-all of a deal. The deals will come around. You might pay an extra couple percentage more, but I love deals out there, and I do get my deals without having to wake up really early in the morning. And my time is worth money, and is it worth it to go online and wait for 3, 4, 5 hours to get those extra dollars off? To me, no. To others, perhaps, you know, but it's a very good point that you made, Kelly, that you do not need to be that person.
Joining us on the show, smart shopper Solmaz Magdaddy, again, of mysweetdeals.ca. Solmaz, regarding gifts in general for kids, you know, what are some gift ideas that parents should be on the lookout for this Christmas?
Well, this Christmas, there's the Kindle Fire. That's a great Christmas gift to buy your kids. It's fairly inexpensive for what you can do with it. You can download books, apps, TV series, movies. It's amazing. I would definitely look at that for a wonderful Christmas gift for your kids this Christmas.
And I suppose too, Solmaz, I think you and I have talked about this before when it comes to electronics. You know, I think a lot of us, again, I'm a huge techie. I love all that stuff. But I think you really have to go in, again, watching the price, watching the sales, you know, and being a very, again, a smart shopper, because you can get wrapped up in, oh, I need that new, you know, PS3 or whatever it is. And then it's, you're blowing your budget to hell.
Exactly. And it's also knowing the accessories that you need to go with it. Because, you know, often you get to the store and in this case, the Kindle Fire, I think, is very affordable. But then they might try and upsell you on different accessories. And you might need some, you know, case is good. You'll protect your Kindle Fire. That's great. But do you need every other bell and whistle that it that they're proposing to you? It's up to you to assess what your needs are and make sure that your item doesn't become really expensive when it started off being a very reasonable Christmas purchase.
Now, for couples, is there any special gift idea that you can tell us about this year as opposed to the usual jewelry or tech toys that a couple would buy each other? Because I think sometimes that's just the safe way to go. Oh, I'm going to get her a necklace. Oh, I'm going to buy him a camera.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, I love the getaway in your own city idea or getaway in a nearby city. That's always, you know, it. Sometimes we don't have all the time in the world to be able to go on a long trip, and long trips are expensive as well. You have to take the plane and rent a hotel and the food and all that stuff. So when you do a weekend getaway in your own city, you can do so many things, and it's so different from the routine, and it's not necessarily jewelry or the classic gift. That's something that my boyfriend and I recently did, and I absolutely loved it. We went to a gorgeous hotel, and we had couples massages. We had a beautiful dinner date, and it definitely was a great idea. I recommend that to all men. If you're thinking of getting something different for the woman in your life, great, great option.
Because as well, like it's obviously this nice gift that you've got, but it's also a great opportunity to spend time with each other. So that's even more valuable than I think most any other gift that you could come up with.
Exactly. I mean, spending time with each other in this techie world where we're constantly checking our phone for messages, emails coming in, you're at the dinner table, the phone rings, that's a luxury we don't really have anymore. So if you do a weekend getaway, shut all that off, make sure you concentrate on each other, and it's a beautiful weekend and wonderful guests.
Fantastic. Solmaz, now before I let you go, is there any final sort of tip that you want to give all of us? Because I feel like there's all of us sitting here listening to you with bated breath, you know, knowing that we have to launch ourselves out into the world to get these gifts and the online gifts. What's your final word for us?
Well, my final words, Kelly, would definitely be to make sure that you have your list ready in hand for your Christmas shopping, and make sure that you keep disciplined when shopping, because it's really easy in this type of Christmas season. Like you say, the carols, it's such a nice time to shop. I love shopping when this happens, and it's so easy to get carried away. So you want to make sure you've got your list in hand and that you're disciplined for 2011's Christmas shopping.
That's fantastic, Solmaz. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this week. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, that's smart shopper Solmaz McDaddy of mysweetdeals.ca. Don't forget to check her out, mysweetdeals.ca.
Bring on the remix.
Summer after high school when we first met.
That's Katy Perry with the One That Got Away remixed by JRMX right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Frank B. Kermit and Solmaz McDaddy. They had excellent advice, and I really appreciate their time and joining us on the show. I also want to mention that next week you're going to hear my chat with the amazing actor Michael Muni of The Young and the Restless. He portrays the devious but delightfully delicious Adam Newman, and I can't wait for you to hear what he's got to say about being on the number one daytime drama, again, The Young and the Restless. As per usual, I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time from William Shedd. A ship is safe in harbor, but that's not what ships are for. Have a great week. Any comments or questions, especially about our new website, please let me know. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.